After the holidays, there's so much to clean up and get ready for the coming year. This leaves me exhausted and a lot of things falling off my to-do list. It's time to lock in, and Omaha Steaks delivers everything you crave to reset after the holidays. An order from them means having high-quality Omaha Steaks on hand at all times. I'm a big meat lover myself, and I always go with medium rare, but there's also plenty of poultry and other options available. Omaha Steaks offers unrivaled quality and variety, and every bite is backed by their 100% guarantee. A family-owned company with over 100 years of expertise in the meat industry. Let Omaha Steaks deliver high-quality proteins right to your door. Visit omahasteaks.com for 50% off site-wide during their end-of-season sale. And for an extra $35 off, use promo code YUM at checkout. That's omahasteaks.com, promo code YUM. Terms apply. See site for details. Go to www.omahasteaks.com to get 50% off site-wide during their end-of-season sale. And use promo code YUM at checkout for an extra $35 off. Minimum purchase may apply. Thanks to Omaha Steaks for sponsoring us.
Yay! Welcome back to the Radical Healing Podcast. I am your host, Jess Betancourt, and my guest today is Sarah Badwani. She is the founder of Happy Tea Amsterdam, and she and I have been working on a collaboration that we're so excited to be offering in January. It is a dry January program, but it's really unique. We are fusing our specialties, hypnosis and microdosing, and it is called, therefore, hypnodosing. And we wanted to do this episode today because there are a lot of questions from both of our communities. People who are familiar with Sarah and her products and her services are a little bit more comfortable with microdosing, and people who are in my communities are a little bit more comfortable understanding what hypnosis is and what hypnotherapy does. So we wanted to answer questions. I've received some questions from my clients and from my audience. And Sarah also has some questions that she'll be asking me about hypnosis. So we're going to be doing a blended family conversation today. Yay, Sarah, welcome.
Thanks for having me.
Oh, yes. The pleasure as always. Sarah has also been on the podcast, was it last summer or even before that?
Yeah, maybe over a year ago.
Yeah, I'll tag it in the show notes, but that we had an initial conversation. When we first met, I stumbled upon Sarah on Instagram, and I was like immediately just super attracted to this beautiful blue tea that you could put an optional microdosing in. And as someone who loves microdosing, I was like, I must try this. So that's how we found each other. And then we did an initial episode together, which I'll tag in the show notes if you want to get more backstory specifically about microdosing. But here we are to answer your questions. We're going to start with answering some microdosing questions answered by Sarah. So Sarah, I think one thing that's on people's mind is microdosing safe? How can you gauge levels of safety?
Yeah, so most people know taking psychedelics in a high dose form, right? And that's what's kind of been promoted in culture and stories. And this is usually what you hear. So it makes sense why people would be hesitant or be scared initially. But I always compare microdosing to the concept of drinking alcohol, because you're essentially microdosing alcohol every time you have a drink. And it's really the same concept, just switching the drug. That microdosing, you're taking such small doses that you're actually not going to be hallucinating or escaping reality or leaving where you are currently. You're actually going to just be more present. And the goal is to stay functional. So if you are worried about the safety of it, you are fully yourself, you're fully functional, you are not escaping that whatsoever. So it's safe from that point of view. In terms of the safety of the drug itself, it's an extremely safe drug, way more than alcohol, and even more than caffeine, I would say. And the only thing to be pay attention to is the contradiction to other medications. So we know that microdosing can be potentially dangerous if you have, for example, bipolar or history of schizophrenia. So this is the people that would need to stay away from that. Otherwise, it's very generally safe for most amount of people.
Generally recognized as safe grass if you're from
Even
the
alcohol.
U.S.
100%.
I would say safer than alcohol. I mean, that's from like, let's do personal testimonials. You know, if I have a beer, for example, and by the way, our program, just as like this is an aside, our program in Dry January is to abstain for 30 days, but that doesn't mean that you are necessarily signing up to become abstinent for life. However, if that is something that you're interested in, this will definitely serve you as a bridge to creating that, as that's a major lifestyle decision. And Sarah has given up alcohol completely. And I have not, however, my relationship with it is in a place that I'm so content with, whereas that wasn't the case for me before I began my hypnosis journey and
I guess
microdosing.
the key, right, is to be content with re the relationship.
Yes. So if you are feeling agitated or irritated by the way that you're consuming alcohol, this is a wonderful space for you to be in to explore what a new relationship would look like. And some people, you know, they use this as a like a transition point to like really answer that question for yourself. So if you're interested in doing hypnodosing, you don't have to have those answers right now. We will actually foster the environment for you to figure that out more deeply and intimately. For the safety of, so it's backtracking a little bit. If I have a beer, for example, and I'm like at a restaurant, I feel shaky about like driving my car even an hour later. Like there's an anxiety that sits in my mind of it's on my breath, it's in my blood, I have my kids in the car, even though I am totally fine, right? I'm fine, but there's this like weird thing that happens to me psychologically if I have a beer or a wine outside of my house and I feel like my capacity to protect my energy has been altered. That's how I experience drinking outside of like domestic places. But I can take a microdose in the morning, forget I even had it, go about my complete entire day, have energy at night. I come home and I'm like organizing drawers and stuff. If I had a wine at 5, or like when I do have a glass of wine at 5 o'clock, for example, I'm tired and irritated at 8 o'clock. And so it's like these personal experiences give you so much information when you really get honest about the story that you have about what's happening and not rationalizing it in a different way.
Yeah. And I think it's important to also talk about the dosing because, of course, it's always dependent on the dose, and everyone has different tolerance in regards to dose. So I think that's another hesitant that people have is like figuring out their dose or what if it's too much or too little or et cetera. And so the term microdosing, there's not like a true definition of it of what exactly that means in terms of dosage. But ideally, it's a dose that is making you not high, right? It's more in the background. And at Happy Tea, we also work a little bit with, I guess you can call it mini dosing or just a little bit of a higher microdose, or sometimes I call it microdose plus, you know? And this is so it's just a bit more present because when we're socializing, we do want to feel just a tiny bit more of a buzz. And we do hear a lot from customers that people like to feel the effect and have it less in the background so they know it's working. There is this talk as well about placebo. Because if it's too much in the background and you don't feel too much of the effects, then yeah, is it placebo or is it not? So there's this middle ground of like having a dose where you know it's working, but it's still super low where you're super functional and you can have a conversation and you can go about your day. In the Netherlands, we have accessibility to magic truffles. And magic truffles contain psilocybin, just like magic mushrooms, but truffles grow below ground and mushrooms grow above ground. And the major difference between the two is that you need a lot more truffles than you would for mushrooms to get the same dose. So around 10 grams of truffles is like 1 gram of mushrooms. And this actually makes it a lot easier to control your dosing because if you're going from 1 gram to 2 grams, it's not a huge difference, even though it feels like, oh, that's a huge step from one to two. But actually, you need 10 grams in order to actually start to get high and hallucinate, right? So if you're taking
Yeah.
1/10 or 2/10 or 3/10, it's not a huge difference, but it can make and break that experience to make sure that you're feeling it versus, for example, 1 gram, most people don't feel it. So that's another reason why we actually do really like using the truffles, is because it's a less risk for error of taking too much, for example.
It'd be kind of like trying to get drunk off like really low alcohol beer or something. You need like 20 beers. And so if you are low dosing, that's not really your intention at all, right? So it's really hard to accidentally hallucinate on truffles because the psilocybin content is so low.
Yes, exactly. And that's another reason why at Happy Tea we really believe in the tea, because you're dosing sip by sip. And so if you start to feel, let's say, too much, then you just stop drinking. Opposed to if you were to eat it, yeah, if you're feeling too much, well, too bad. you have to, you know,
Wait.
you just wait, you know.
Wait your
So
health.
that's why the drinking it also makes it a bit more accessible, a bit more yeah, easier on the oh, if I'm gonna feel too much, because you're just going sip by sip, just like again, what you would do with alcohol.
And I really like with your product, with your tea, people are adding their own microdose to the tea. It's not like built in there in some mysterious ingredient that you're like, oh my God, I'm scared. I'm drinking the Kool-Aid. Like you measure it, you put it in your tea, you steep it, you take your time with it, you set your
Exactly.
intentions. Like you're in control of this setting. It's not like you walked into a party and you don't know what's in the punch bowl.
Exactly. And we totally want to avoid that, right? We want you to know fully what it is that you're putting in, how much, etc. And the best part is, let's say you put in 2 grams in there, you're only consuming 2 grams. You cannot consume more than that because you've only put in 2 grams. So, yeah, it just makes that whole being a little bit hesitant and scared about the dosing, it makes it a lot easier, a lot more accessible, and a lot, yeah, just functional.
Yeah, and it's nice that people get to find their own sweet spot of what is the proper dosage for them. Like when I started microdosing, I think I was taking like a quarter of a gram and I liked it and it was fine. And then I would take a half a gram. And now I think I take like a gram each time I microdose, and that feels really appropriate for me. But my friend who's like 250 pounds, my big Basque friend, he will take like 2 grams and he's like, that's perfect for me. So it's very appropriate for your constitution, for your weight, for your desires, for your agenda for the day. But I have never felt taken by a microdose.
I
Never,
mean, you
never.
definitely could, right? Like you
I
could.
think I don't think it would accidentally happen though.
Yeah, exactly. Like that's a decision up to you if that's your intention,
Right.
you know. And again, we have a bit of a social focus, and when we are socializing, we do want to feel something. Like that's why we drink alcohol. So going a little bit higher, like I have like a daytime dose and a social dose. And then that social dose is just a bit more enhanced because that's what I'm looking for in those settings. So that's why with Happy Tea we like the idea that you can control your dosage much better, because once you understand, okay, what's this effect on me and what is my sweet spot of dosing, you can then adjust it based on your occasion and your setting and your intention.
Let me ask you the question. Pardon me, get over my resfriada. The concern about psilocybin being habit forming or addictive, how would you address that?
Yes. So psilocybin is mainly touching on your serotonin receptors, and it does not interact with your opioid receptors, which is the receptors that are mainly known for causing addiction. So if you're looking at the list of addicted drugs, psilocybin is pretty much at the bottom. So alcohol is way more addicting than psilocybin.
In the top three.
So yeah, psilocybin is not addicting whatsoever. And I can say personally, I have access to psilocybin every day, 24/7, and you know, I'm not abusing it whatsoever. This is a drug that you don't want to abuse, and actually it kind of once you start using it and once it has an effect on you, it feels like actual medicine, that it's still working even when you're not taking it. That's the best part of this, is that eventually you don't need as much. And so yes, there's nothing addicting about it. I mean, when you talk about high doses, you can say that there are definitely some people in the world who are taking high doses on a regular basis, and you can say they're getting addicted to that feeling of euphoria, because some people, can be addicted to that feeling. But again, that's normally in high doses because you get way more, you get euphoria from high doses, not from so much from low doses. And that's again just more on the feeling that it gives you, not on the drug itself.
And what are, like, speak to us a little bit about short-term benefits and long-term benefits.
Yes, we deal with this a lot at Happy Tea as well, because we give people the choice of using it as a short-term, one-time thing, or into a protocol on a long-term thing. And you can really go about it in multiple ways. For someone who wants to use it for long-term benefits, this might be someone who is actually experiencing something like a burnout or a little bit of PTSD or dealing with some traumas or depression. There's something that they're dealing with that they want to fix and they want to improve. And so this would be a great reason to go on to a protocol, essentially a schedule, a routine. And this allows for, yeah, to really go and focus more on that intention that you're going for to give you those long-term benefits. So this was something I was doing when I first started microdosing. I was just doing it for general well-being. And then I started to realize, oh, actually, I think I was a little bit depressed, once you feel the difference, and then you're like, oh wow, I had no energy for life. And then you feel the difference. And I was using it on a protocol, and that's when I really saw the best benefits, right? But again, this is all dependent on where you are currently and where you want to get to, what's your intention behind that. And then on a short-term basis, which is kind of what I use it now for, it is such a, I mean, I'm such an advocate for this, but it is just such an amazing way, or it's an amazing tool to use to connect with your friends and the people, that you want to have a bond with. And so in a short-term basis, if you have, just a friend over or a couple of friends, and you make a teapot and you put that in the middle of a table instead of a bottle of wine, and then you just have such a nice evening, laughing, giggling, connecting. It really does. Again, it's a tool to help with that. And that could just be seen as a one night thing. And it's beautiful. It's really beautiful, And then, maybe you want to do that more regularly. And then that becomes your social protocol, right? And then you see the long-term benefits if you're doing that with, the same kind of friends, or let's say your partner. Oof, you're going to have so much more connection with your partner, if you're going to be on a protocol with that. So the long-term benefits are definitely more present when you're using it more regularly. If you're using it on a short term, just on a one-time thing, you might, feel the benefits just for one evening, and then maybe the next day you'll have a next day glow, or maybe that evening is going to have an impact on you, but it's not going to be as strong as using it more long term.
So it's like it's multifunctional depending on
So
what you
multifunctional.
want to use
That's
it
why I
for.
love it. It's so multifunctional.
I love how you have created this like custom around it. Like, tea is a custom for thousands of years, and psilocybin has been a custom more so in indigenous societies for thousands of years, and it's bringing these two things together like so beautifully. Like, something people are really interested in, like, in altered states. Like,
Yeah.
we're really interested
For
in
humans.
feeling altered and exploring consciousness. That's what it means to be human. But animals do it too. There are animals that are found to like eat fermented fruits on purpose and like feel these hallucinogenic states. But it's like our quest to connect with something that's beyond just our small egocentric selves and like this really material 3D world. And not like it blasts you off into the stratosphere, and like unless you want it to, it can be used for that way too. But to like make this like something that can be social, it can connect us more as human beings. It creates like a safe and nurturing space for people to come together. Because as Sarah and I were saying, she's opening her second space now in Amsterdam, which is going to be more of a community space for people to gather and have tea with or without microdosing, adaptogenic drinks, functional beverages, and like sit in a peaceful, beautiful, serene place that feels good. And we don't have enough of those. And so we default to going to bars because we are social, we are tribal creatures. We do want to feel that euphoria with other people.
Yeah, we're
And
creating
this
it.
has been like taken away from us, you know, over the centuries of
Yeah.
needing to control people. And like, I think I honestly believe that alcohol is legal and psilocybin is squished because it's really easy to control people when their prefrontal cortex has gone offline and they can't use executive decision-making processes.
Use some brain cells.
Just everybody sedate and then we'll arrest you. it's like a revolutionary act. It feels like a radical thing to do in a really, I don't want to say subtle way, but like it's a radical thing to do in a really, what's the word I want? My adjectives are escaping me right now, but like it's an act of rebellion to do something like this, or even to join, to come into a hypnodosing space. It's like a radical act. It's outside of the norms, so to speak. It's things that have been around for eons, but they're kind of pushed to the side because they really do create more empowered people. And as like the landscape of the medical model and like the educational industrial complexes and stuff, the people are much more empowered and capable and sovereign when we take charge of our own thinking processes and we decide what we want to do habitually. Drinking alcohol habitually is like, I don't want to say it's like a prison because I don't want to judge it like that. And that's really not my forte. And I do still drink, but it is definitely a stark contrast to what's available when you really take back all of your neurological power, when you take back your consciousness like that. And you use it for, like, when you stop feeling addicted to things, you have so much more creative energy. You have so much more desire to create the world that you want to live in. And I think that's what Sarah and I are really up to is like, we're not like, fuck you, alcohol, and like, yeah, mushrooms, but we're like, hey, what's really available to us? And what is the potential of creating a space like this and bringing people into it? So that people who do feel imprisoned by the need, it's like a mental prison to feel like you have to go to the bar, or like you can't be social without drinking, or you can't relax, or like, oh my God, I just need to get to the store to buy a bottle of wine. I can't even focus on what's in front of me. Like that is a kind of hell.
That's addiction.
It's addiction. It's addiction. I didn't even know I was addicted for like 20 years. I felt like that.
Yeah.
And when I realized that that's what was going on, it really felt like breaking a spell.
Yeah.
And then I got obsessed with how to get out of that in a way that wasn't like the traditional methods of
Yeah.
AA or pharmaceuticals or like all these things that just didn't really appeal to me.
Yeah. And then once you're out of it, once you stop drinking and you stop participating in the action of drinking, but also in the conversation of drinking, because people talk about it very interesting, as if it's just so normal, etc. And you really start to see, yeah, the relationship that people have with it and how unaware they are of how that relationship has actually gone too far. But for them, it's normal, right? Because it's been so normalized. And it's like, well, actually, I hear that you're addicted to it, but you have no idea that you are, right? And this is something you don't understand unless you start to give it up or change your relationship to it. Again, I like to say like change your relationship to it
Me
because it's
too.
just about being aware of the relationship. If you want to have a relationship with alcohol, have a relationship with alcohol. Just make sure it's not toxic. Just make sure it's not taking over your life and making you so unaware of what's really happening. Just be aware of that relationship and how to use it. And then that's the difference, right? And I hear it more often than not of people just being very unaware of that relationship and making it seem like that relationship is good for them. And then I'm just there like, I'll shut up and drink my tea.
Not for you to say, you know, and if you do say it, people are going to get really pissed off at you. It's like for everyone to discover.
Everyone to discover.
So that's what Sarah and I are offering is this place of discovery. So if you want to come into the held space of discovery, we begin on January 1st. I would love to answer some hypnodosing questions before we can
Yes.
get into the details
I have.
of hip did I say hypnodosing? I'm getting over being sick, BT dub. If you're listening to this, I don't normally sound so nasally, but I can answer hypnosis questions.
Perfect, because I have questions for you.
Yeah.
So, I mean, when you say hip, no dosing, hypnotherapy, all these words, you know, I think most people just imagine, you know, the typical swing and being hypnodosed and being kind of like, you know, how they're scared of microdosing, being taken out of their reality. Is this mind control? Where does that, where's that gray area? Where does that go in terms?
Is it mind control? No. Is it a tool that's used for like psyops and things like that? Sure. But what hasn't been manipulated and bastardized by, you know, nefariant powers? Is that the word, nefariant? This type of thing, like swinging a pendulum or a clock in front of your eyes, is to make your eyes go from left to right. And that synchronizes the hemispheres of the brain, which relaxes the analytical mind. So that's what that is. When hypnosis is done in for like showmanship, there this is called an induction. So like you're calming the brain by having the eyes move from left to right. But you can also achieve this same effect by walking on like an open road where there's no traffic. And your eyes naturally do this. So it's like it's synchronizing the hemispheres of the brain, which gets the body in a deeper coordination, which actually reduces anxiety. Anxiety lives in like our analytical mind doing worst case scenario situations and keeping us out of the present moment. It's taking us out of the body and it's putting us into like fear-based what ifs. Or it's recalling something from the past that's like, oh, this reminds me of that. So this type of induction is just to calm the mind so that you can access deeper parts and recesses of your mind to work with. It's making your mind available for you, but it's not mind control. The way that I work with hypnosis, the way that hypnotherapists work with hypnosis, we're just using hypnosis as a way to get in an alpha brain state. So that you're not running your to-do list, you're not thinking about how you hate your ex-boyfriend or like you need to clean your house. It's like all of that needs to just shut up so that you can hear yourself more deeply. And that's really all it is. It's not mind control because a proper hypnotherapist only offers suggestions that you have presented or agreed to. So if there's something that's at odds, your mind creates a resistance if there's something at odds that's presented to you when you're in a relaxed state. Hypnosis is just deeply relaxed flow state, alpha brainwave. And in that state, after that state's been induced and the suggestions are brought to your mind, you've already agreed to them conscientiously. And if I was like, and now you're a bear, you would go, what? Like it would, what? There has to be there's an agreement first. So you're just like playing within that agreement. So people who I work with are like, I want to stop picking my skin. I obsessively pick my face. I'm like, okay, so instead of saying what you don't want, we have to introduce an affirmative language-based suggestion. So we would turn that into, I keep my fingernails off my face and I will allow my skin to heal and I'm patient with my cellular regeneration, that type of thing. So when I say that to a client, it's their own words. It's like it's what exactly what they want, but they haven't allowed it in because they've blocked it with something analytical. Yeah. So
And
not
so how would you compare this to therapy? Because obviously a lot of people know therapy, a lot of people go to therapy. Therapy can be very helpful, but this obviously sounds way deeper than therapy. So how would you compare it, and what would you say, why would one person go to one over the other?
It really depends what your preferences are, what you're comfortable with, what you connect with, because there's how many kinds of therapy. Like this is a therapy. It's not traditional talk therapy, because we're not talking things out. We're reframing meaning. That's the difference between like traditional talk therapy and hypnotherapy is you're relaxed and trusting enough with it. And people do, I work with clients in their own home. Like they're laying in their own bed with an eye pillow on. So they're also not analyzing information in the environment. Like your eyes are closed. So you're not taking in and reading and processing like thousands of bits of information. You're recessing. You're going back through time. You're going back into the subconscious realms of your mind to tap into a place and point in time where you made up a significance or a meaning that is troublesome to you now, but it made sense at the time, right? But a lot of these things we make up because it helps us survive in the moment. It helps us come through difficult situations, but often those things are with a much younger mind that is not as well resourced as our adult mind. And so this comes in, this like is really relevant with alcohol use because many, many people started drinking in their teenage times, right? It's like going to parties and drinking as a teenager. Not everybody, but like the majority of people that I speak to and work with started drinking it. And for me, I was like 12 when I took a sip of brandy at skate night, and then like 14, 15 started drinking on the weekends. Those significances and stories that are attached to alcohol of like, I belong, this is how I have fun, where those things might have been taking place anyway. And for many people, they were. I had fun, I never drank, like, I had a great time. But when they're conflated, they become like one thing. And so we have to disentangle that alcohol equals fun, alcohol equals me and my friends. Alcohol means I'm sexy. Like that is like a conflation. And so we recess back in time so you can see, not everybody sees imagery visually, but there's a sense of it. There's like a sense of something, or people often, it depends what kind of learner you are and how your mind works, but there is often a scene or like flashes of things or traces of things, like a dream, associations. Or you see kind of like dream sequence kinds of things, not super vivid, like you're watching a movie, but it's like, oh, this sense of I was at, at the river or the field, or like I see this. Okay. And then we like pull at those threads a little bit to see it within a, you see things with your current present mind, but you can see, you have a sense of things that happened in the past. You have a sense of why you made up what you did about yourself or other people or the world in general. And then you can give like, oh my God, I thought that then. I thought I was a, an insecure, unconfident person, but I'm actually not that. Like I'm not that. I don't feel that way anymore, but I still have that meaning. So we're reframing significance and meaning, which gives people a different sense of self and a different sense of identity because behavior comes from identity. So when you shift the way that you talk about yourself to yourself, which is done very well with hypnosis, you do things differently.
Totally,
Yeah.
totally. I can, I really see it as like you have these two different brains, your conscious and your subconscious, and your subconscious is way harder to control. And sometimes just willpower alone is not going to get you deep enough to make those brain waves, to actually help that second brain change so that the other brain can then, act on that thing.
carry out function.
Yeah.
Yeah. You
And
need
I
both, obviously, right? But you
need
have to
both.
get them both on the same page. You have to get them to agree. And you have to
Exactly.
have your conscious mind see what is buried or suppressed in your past deeper recesses so that they can agree, so that they can act together, and then you don't feel in conflict. You don't feel like you're fighting yourself or it's like willpower and like fighting and stuff. Like that sounds so awful. Sounds
Power alone is
terrible.
hard, yo.
Hard. And who wants to do that, you
And
know?
I think a lot of people also feel a bit defeated sometimes, or they feel really, crap about themselves when they're not able to do something on willpower alone. And it's like, don't feel crap about yourself. It's hard, And that just tells me you need to go deeper in that subconscious because there's something pulling you, or pulling you away from whatever you want to achieve. And that's buried deep in your subconscious. And
Totally.
you have to get there. And so could people get there on their own? Like, do they need to be with a hypnotherapist? Or let's say if you're with a hypnotherapist for like a month, for example, like in our program, is this something that people could achieve on their own?
Without alternative therapies or modalities, do you mean?
Yeah, like without a guide, without having a therapist with them, like maybe not at the beginning, like once they kind of go through it for some time, is this something achievable on your, like could you do it on your own, for example?
On my own, I don't know that I would have come to it because you need new information. Like you have to pattern interrupt. So if you're living your life, daily routines, everything's the same, you think the same things, you have the same beliefs, you do the same actions over and over, and nothing new is coming into your environment or into your consciousness to give you new information to pattern interrupt. I know. I mean, it's not possible unless like you're struck by lightning or like something has to happen that's different. And is hypnotherapy and microdosing the only way? Of course not. Is it something that's really accessible and available and like generally recognized as safe for people who feel that they're of sound mind? For sure. So I find that like it's just a really I wouldn't be where I am without if I hadn't become a hypnotherapist. I would probably still be drinking a bottle of wine a day. I'd probably look like I was 60, I'm 44. I wouldn't be happy with my parenting. Like I just know this. Like that's where I was in high irritation, high fucking irritation. I couldn't really drive because I had so much anxiety because like my toxicity level was so high. So I am so grateful that I had these like series of small breakdowns. Like you have to break down to break through is this, it is a blanket statement, but I also think it's probably really true. But you don't have to have a nervous breakdown and like be hospitalized, but you do have to break down some of this like protective psychological armor that a lot of us wear of like, this is who I am. This is how I'm comfortable being. This is how I know myself to be. And you do need to step into the unfamiliar a little bit. You need to be a little bit uncomfortable. You need to be willing to see something that is there, that is acting on you. There's just that kind of like willingness, permissiveness. You don't have to have all the answers. You don't have to know where you're going, but you have to be ready for something new. You have to be like, I'm tired of living like this. Repetitively, I've lost motivation. I don't even know what I'm doing. Like, I'm not interested in career. It's like that is a breaking down of like your natural neurological wiring, which would have you be joyful, which would have you be happy and fulfilled. It's also very true that like if you can't experience the depth of your emotional life, you can't come to the highs. So like alcohol really just makes it like this flat place, and then we kind of like bobble around that. But when you take that away and you give like permission for your emotions to move through you and to have a really rich emotional life, it goes really low sometimes, but it also is like the most ecstatic. And like, I feel like that's what makes us feel really alive is our relationship with our emotional selves. And we shortcut that when we try to manage ourselves with toxic substance, you know?
And the
Yeah.
goal is to feel as much as you as possible, to tap into you and what you really feel and really feel it,
Yeah.
not be suppressed and not be blocked and all of that. And I think that's why I just love the idea of the combination of microdosing and hypnotherapy because microdosing really taps into your neuroplasticity. It really goes into those pathways that you've built that are ingrained in your brain and say, hey, actually, maybe we need to freshen this up a little bit and fresh pile of snow on here so we can make new pathways. And hypnotherapy and microdosing are just such a great synergy for that. And it really, and you know, some people have awareness, like they have that breakthrough moment where they're like, oh, I really need to change this, but then can't rely on willpower alone because it's way too ingrained in them. And then there's other people who actually don't have that awareness yet. They haven't had that breakthrough, but have things ingrained and patterns ingrained in them that that's just on autopilot now, right? Doing the combination of hypnotherapy and microdosing can help both of these people just tap into, and then you learn something you never knew about yourself. Like I said, when I was microdosing, I was like, oh, I didn't realize how depressed I actually was. Like I would have never even thought that. And then you feel the other side. You're like, oh, this is what happiness feels like. This is what's like being motivated to wake up every day. Oh, okay. Now I see the difference, right? And sometimes people need that in order to have their breakthrough. You know, everyone has a different kind of path in that. So I have one last question for you. It's more in regards to the actual program that we're doing, the hypnodosing. So let's say someone already has a bit of awareness of their relationship with alcohol, or they're already drinking it moderately. Is this program still for them? Like how much of what we'll be doing in the program is centered around that relationship, and at what point of their relationship is a good point for them to actually join this program?
It's a great question. I really tailor this content for the spectrum of alcohol use because it isn't, we're not talking about you're going from a bottle of wine to zero for 30 days. Those are metrics. And we are talking about identity shifts. That's what we're doing. And so we're not telling people who to be. We're cultivating that awareness for each person of like, what is my next level self? And using, I really like to use alcohol use as like a gateway into that because if it's something, if you're even listening to this, it's in the way. You know, if like you're even interested in this conversation that Sarah and I are having, it's a block for you. And like to just be honest about that, even if it's like you know, if you're somebody who casually drinks, but you're like, well, what else is there? Well, that's what it is. You know, it's like it's the thing that you don't necessarily want to change, but you don't have to change it in this excruciating way. It's like it's a highly customized place. So if you're somebody who's like, I just want to quit drinking, but I'm terrified of saying that I want to be sober, I don't even know how to do that, this is a great place for you. If you're somebody who just like tends to overdrink on the weekends and you're done with that and you're just wondering how else you can socialize or be around other people or fill your time, this is a great place for you. It's just like a highly tough. I've worked with people on the entire spectrum of alcohol use disorder, and there are so much commonality. It also just relates to the same thing of like, how are you talking to yourself? Who are you telling yourself that you are? And if you want to do something differently, you have to speak to yourself in a different way. You have to, as Joe Dispenza says, like you literally have to become somebody else. Your personality, this is another Joe Dispenza quote, your personality determines your personal reality, and identity is that fluctuation point inside of your personality. Some things are defaulted, right? Like ancestral traits, karmic things, DNA things, like that's not what we're talking about. We're talking about what's within your control is how you speak to yourself about who you are. Because when you solidify that into a place that's expanded beyond what's normal for you, you're 75% of the way there. Then you just have to execute it. But the execution time, and what I mean by that is like, oh, I'm at the store. Normally I go buy wine. I don't know if I really want to. It's like, oh, cool. Like now you're in the field. You know, like now you're not a spectator. Now you're playing, right? And like you already feel differently. You have these tools. Now what do you get to do? Like then it becomes really cool because it becomes very experiential.
I love that. Like, don't be a spectator in your own life.
Yeah. No, man. I would rather like people make fun of me and like not agree with me than like and be afraid and like I'm sweating right now. You know, like I sweat, I'm nervous, I like, but I move forward anyway because I feel like I couldn't not do it. I feel like whatever somebody feels compelled to do, like that will fester in you until you act on it. And you and I are not the only people who have, I really believe that everybody has this, you know? And to be completely distracted with like 60% of your time for, as an example, thinking about when do I get a drink and how do I get a party or fuck, now I have a headache. That's a lot of time. That's a lot of time. You don't know how long you're here. Like Sarah knows I'm watching Outlander where like people die left and right. It's like, oh, like we're no different. We're just modern people. We live a little longer, but like we don't know how long we're here. What do we want to do?
Why live a life where you have these goggles on and you're, yeah, just a spectator? Yeah, I think that's a beautiful way to put
Yeah, Earth is cool, man.
it.
Earth's cool is a
Your
cool
subconscious is cool. Your
place.
subconscious
It is.
answers. We
It is.
need
Do you
answers.
have like not trippier dreams, but like more insightful and vivid dreams since not drinking? Something you notice?
It's not something I've noticed. I think definitely psychedelics help with that.
Mm.
And I've also been trying to be more aware of that. But my dreams seem to be super random that I don't know how to get more insight from it. But no, it's not something I've noticed. Possibly, I don't know. I have, yeah, not sure.
Oh, interesting. I can give you a little fun thing to do if you want.
Yeah.
Before you go to bed, ask a question. Ask a question as you're laying there and just like, and as you drift off, just have the intention of, may my dreams show me some information about this question. And then when you wake up, you write down anything you saw, right? Like a boat or a wolf or my grandpa or whatever. And then you write it all down. And then you just fuse the question through. Then you can write like, what does the, like a bear mean to me? You know, like I'm from California, so maybe a bear to me means California or something like that. But it's everything is personal and everything is symbolic of something else because the language of dreams is symbolism. It's
Yes.
not, if nothing is literal.
Yes. Yes, I've tried that before and it's always been like, okay, I saw this. What does that mean? You know, you're like trying to put together all these symbols, what they mean, but no, I think the potential of dreams is something I need to tap more into.
Oh, maybe we'll have a program for that in the summer. Sarah and I have lots of cool ideas coming down the pipeline and that are in the works. I'm really honored to have you as my creative co-collaborator. It's so exciting.
Likewise.
Thank you. If you're interested in joining us for Hypnodosing Dry January 2026, please come in now. The early bird pricing, which is saving over 20%, ends on the solstice, which is in a few days of this publication, like 3 days. But you can still come in if you're listening to this after the 21st. And we'll put the link in the show notes. You can also, what's the name of the website, Sarah? Because I feel like it changed. Maybe just Happy Tea. Is it happytea.com or Microdose Together?
Microdosetogether.com, and under the shop you'll see hypnotherapy. That's where our hypnodosing program is.
Awesome. You can also look on my website, The Roots of Health Coaching. It's up there in the on the front page. It'll be in the show notes as well. And come in and join us and
Yes.
create an identity shift with microdosing and hypnosis.
Your new
You
year
won't
in the right way.
regret it.
In the actual right way.
Yeah, not just, and I just want to be explicit that this isn't a dry January buy. It's a hey, how do you want the rest of your life to go starting now? And
Yeah.
also with that, the caveat that there's nothing to wait for. You don't need to wait for perfect timing because I don't really know that such a thing exists. You don't need to wait for any XYZ. If you feel like you're just irritated and tired and alcohol use is a part of your life, why not play with the experiment of what's possible for you when you just remove that for 30 days? And then not to be like, now let's pop champagne on February 1st. I'm very adept at helping people shift this habit for the long term. So we're not creating, this is not a dry January open and close. It's a way to create ritual in your life and to infuse your actions with intention to create new neural pathways, how to pattern interrupt. That's what we're doing. So if this interests you, come on in. If we didn't answer your question, email it to us.
We'll be happy to.
Yep, totally. Any closing thoughts, Sarah?
Well, that's it. I think this is such an amazing program. We got a lot of interest for it. I think it's something people really need. And you know what I really love about this is that I feel like, you know, sometimes we all are like, oh, maybe I should go to therapy. And if you're not already, therapy can be a bit inaccessible in the sense of like you have to find the right therapist. It requires your time, of course, and it could be expensive. And if you want to rely on a therapist every time you're going through something, then you know that could be a bit unsustainable. And I think this is a great path that more people should take to really tap into, yeah, those strings, the subconscious, other ways of getting to your core that will help with so many breakthroughs. So I love that we're making this more accessible, and yes, I want to keep doing that.
Yeah. And I'll just speak to the features real quickly. There's an app space that Sarah designed that's really beautiful. And we wanted it to feel like a space you come into, like if you came and sat down at a cafe, like Sarah is doing. It's like a virtual cafe space. There's a community chat that you have 24/7 access to. There will be meditations and resources, and all of the hypnosis recordings will be hosted in there. So you can also listen to them on your phone. You can have them on the go. So we want it to feel like as fluid as possible in terms of access and ease.
It's going to be great.
Yes. So come join us and order your microdosing, hopefully before Christmas, so that Sarah can get it out to you. And if you're in the US, we also have an associate who ships from the US, and all that information is
For
on
everyone
the
around the world.
website. Man, we're uniting like mycelium. thank you, Sarah. And thank you, everyone.
Well.
Thank you for tuning in today. We will be back next week with another guest, and we look forward to connecting with you soon. Have a beautiful day.
Bye.